The revolution will be broadcast.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Welcome back, Earthlings, to the one, the only Mystifying Oracle Radio. Your ghost man, Demon Hunter, show Demon Hunter.
Mr. Furless.
What's going on, pal?
Oh, I'm partying like it's night.
Hey, we should take this time to special thank all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Spreaker, The Newsbreaker, Planet Paranormal, Paranormal Radio, Attentive Home Healthcare, good people ready to serve the ones you love. Especially if you're in Indianapolis, Indiana, since that's where they're located. The SWL Project, give some love, share some love. Nathan.
Burris.
Everybody needs some love. Check them out, theswlproject.com. Check them out today. Welcome back to studio, everybody. Yeah, rock and roll. Rock and roll forever. Hey, we're live, dude.
We're live.
We are live. We're going out. We're going out everywhere. I actually hit the right buttons, I think, tonight. But I don't know, guys. We're trying to internet radio on the run here, man. We're trying to fix it up. We had some audio problems last week, so we didn't know what was going to happen.
Not us, John.
No, not us. But yeah, it did hit us, and you know, booking guests and everything, and trying to deal with will we go out and actually sound good? But like, we had an echo last week. You guys, I know you probably.
You might have heard it.
You might have
heard it. And heard it again.
And you probably were just like, oh, these guys, who cares? We get the gist of it. So anyway, guys, welcome back to studio. We got a great show tonight. We got a lot of things going on. Comic-Con coming up, Nate.
I know.
Comic-Con's right around the corner. Matter of fact, it's Friday.
Yeah, we're still putting that together, Sean. Remember, they canceled my flight, so now I've got to get a new flight.
Yeah, we got to work that out, guys. So hopefully we're going to be at Comic-Con. But anyway, let's talk about that in a minute, because I don't want to forget about tonight's guest.
Tonight's guest.
Here we go. Tonight's guest. Hey, Nathan, he is the future of Bigfoot research. He's the co-author of a scientific document that he says definitely proves the existence of an unidentified Bigfoot-like creature in the Mount St. Helens area of Washington State. Yeah. Huh? What do you think about it?
I think that's cool.
I like it.
Yeah.
Tonight, our good friend Mitchell Townsend is live here in studio. Big Mitch, he's going to tell us all about the future of Bigfoot research. And what's going on out there with them Sasquatch, man? They're running around.
Why are they so uppity all of a sudden?
Yeah. Anyway, he stops by tonight, guys. You'd never heard nothing like him. If you didn't catch our good friend Mitch on last time, you missed one heck of a show. Because, you know, I do think, if you believe in Bigfoot, I think Mitch is going to be the one that takes us to the next level of Bigfoot research. That's what I think.
I always love when we have the people on who really know their facts, Sean.
Yeah, because
really know it. Like when we have, UFO specialists on.
Well, yeah.
You know, you'll have somebody on who's been abducted by a UFO, mm-hmm. and they'll tell you what happened.
Yeah.
Then you have somebody like Stanton Friedman who can come in and explain UFOs to you.
Right.
And then Sean and I sit here and we're like, just standing there going,
oh, we understand. Ding. What are you trying to say? We're foolish?
Yes. Not us. No, not us.
That might have been in school, but never on the show. We've been stumped before. But
When Stanton came on? Yeah, we were a little stumped, yeah. I'd say.
Nobody could stay with that man. He's out of here, man. He's not even from this world. He's insane, dude. So what's going on in the topics today in the world of strange, man?
You know, Sean, I have been trying to break myself of my habit of germophobia.
Yeah, yeah.
I have I've been trying to cut down on washing my hands like 60 times a day, especially now that I work a very dirty job. I can't be constantly worried about it.
Yeah.
So I found the 6 things I should make sure are clean every day.
Okay.
So first of all, your entryway.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about like you ladies have a different entryway than we do. your front door.
Yeah.
It's really important that it stay clean, the doorknobs, that kind of stuff, and keys, you know, all that little stuff you clean, you touch every day, that needs to be clean.
Right.
Dish towels.
Okay.
Do you have a dish towel hanging next to your sink, Sean?
I do. I think we covered this before with the dish towel. You hate dish towels.
I hate dish towels. Sponges, hate sponges.
Yeah.
Well. Kitchen and bathroom counters.
Okay.
Remote control.
Yeah.
This was a big one for me, Sean.
Right.
You too.
Yeah. Because the kids are filthy. I don't think we're going to argue that fact. They're dirty little monsters. And, you know, they go to the bathroom and stuff. Who knows? They might wash their hands. They might not. We teach them the best we can. But then they touch the remote controls, the video game controller, you know, and then you touch it and you go eat. Because you don't know. You're not thinking somebody smeared poo on the television remote. But it's a possibility, Nathan. Take us deeper.
Well, that's how people wind up with those horrible diseases.
Take us deeper into the poo TV remote conspiracy.
Didn't we go through the poo TV remote? Like, that was one of the worst when we were trying to find out the truth of whether or not flushing
I don't know.
It spreads the poo all over you.
No. Poo. I don't know. Do you think it happened?
No.
Okay. Have you ever got poo on your...
But the last one, Sean, which doesn't affect you or
have
I...
Have you or anyone you know ever had poo on their remote control? Have they? I mean, do you know
them? No, but I have sat in a chair once, like, moving around and, like, ran my hand across it, and there was poo on the chair.
Oh! Was that at the movie theaters?
No, that was at somebody's house.
That is
and
disgusting.
I politely got up and went and washed my hands very, very like 50 times in 1 minute. And
I politely ran.
Came in and said, I think there's something on the chair. You know, there's probably some chocolate or something on that. You probably want to clean that up. It's people who have kids. You have kids, you know.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do with kids? I told you they're filthy.
That's why I don't ever go to people's houses when they have kids.
I liked your cricket sound, by the way. It sounded real crystal.
It was crystal.
It was crystal.
Those are my pet crickets.
You got some good load up there. Are you using the new Spreaker Front Page app?
No, that's the G&D show backup computer.
Oh my god!
Or actually, no, that's Jeremy and Giselle, my pet crickets. Over
Jeremy there. And Giselle.
Giselle.
Anyway, so what else? What was the last one?
Last one was the bottom of your purse. Now, you and I don't have purses, not a big deal for us. But, you know, it always makes me wonder, you know, when your mom would say you'd sneeze and she'd reach in her bag and pull out a tissue and hand it to you. And I'm like, I don't want that up against my nose.
Even at that young, you realize the dangers of.
Oh, I was a germaphobe from day one, man. I came out of my mother's. Mother and just looked up at the doctor and said, you better have some place clean to put me, mister.
Put me somewhere clean. I thought you were born in a barn or something, like a barnyard, actually.
No.
I thought you were. I thought that was the story. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It was people of the earth, you know?
No, I was actually born in a... they've actually replaced the hospital that I was born in.
Oh,
the building that was the hospital that I was born in is now like office buildings for the people who work in the hospital.
Okay.
I was born in the hospital. I'm not Bigfoot.
I think they turned mine into a museum because, of course, that's where the amazing ghost man was born. They do tours daily out there at the hospital.
By appointment only because they're so booked up.
They are. They take buses out there. A lot of Chinese take photography.
Asian, Sean.
Asian. I think it was Asian. That's terrible. You're racist. Anyway, next story. The Conjuring sequel tells of the Enfield poltergeist, Nathan. Very exciting. Have you heard about this? Conjuring sequel's coming up.
I have seen the premiere, yeah. Or the preview.
Preview, yeah.
And looking forward to it.
Okay, yeah. I don't know. Does it do something? Well, anyway, let's read this real quick. guys, anyway, if you're in the paranormal realm like we are, you live for these kind of movies. Of course, this is the follow-up of The Conjuring. They're not going to be linked, but the movie The Conjuring was phenomenal, and it's from the true case files of the Warrens, which is Lorraine Warren and Ed Warren. Nathan's closer to them than I was. And, you know, very well-respected paranormal investigators in the field that we're in, Nathan. So anyway, The Conjuring sequel tells of the Enfield poltergeist. A quick look over the IMDb page of The Conjuring sequel reveals which of the Warrens' haunting tales will get a big screen adaption. According to the site, which is often wrong, New Line Cinema's sequel is titled The Conjuring 2, The Enfield Poltergeist. Insidious, Saw, and Conjuring's James Wan, which wouldn't come on the show, so up yours, James Wan. Yeah, unless you come on. And then I will, if he comes on, I will personally retract that statement, Nathan. I will take it.
We will go back and delete it from the show.
Yeah.
People will have no idea what we're talking about right now because it will be gone.
But for right now, up yours, James Wan. He's returning, though, Nate, to the director's chair to tell the Enfield Poltergeist, which took place at a council house in Brimsdown Village Borough of Enfield. Enfield, England, during the late 1970s. Yeah. In August 1977, Nathan, single-parent Peggy Hodgson called police to her rented home in Enfield after two of her four children claimed that furniture was moving and the knocking sounds were heard on walls. Huh. The children included Marguerite, age 13, Janet, age 11, Johnny, age 10, and, of course, little Billy, age 7. A female police constable saw a chair slide on the floor but couldn't determine if it moved by itself or it was pushed by someone. Later claims included alleged demonic voices, loud noises, thrown rocks, and toys. Now, some of this stuff, Nate, you know, they got pictures of it with Ed and Lorraine, and there's lights and lightning. Now, this was the one where you see the lady getting thrown through the air, and it looks like there's lightning wrapped around her?
Yes. Yes.
Now, so they had pictures of this. Where it happened. Of course, Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson will portray Ed and Lorraine Warren. Again, they did a fantastic job in The Conjuring, the first one, don't you think?
I loved it. I thought it was a fabulous job.
Yeah. Anyway, the BBC, everybody's on the bandwagon. They're happy. England's getting showcased in the grand old
Why wouldn't they
US
be?
Of A and all around the world. Yeah, anyway, bloodydisgusting.com, guys. We've got that story. Thanks, guys. It's bloodydisgusting.com.
.com.
Yeah, and of course, James Wan, big picture him smiling because he's banking. Yeah, the guy's banking off of, you
know. I can't imagine why he doesn't want to come on our show.
I don't know. Well, you know, and here you go, the true story behind The Conjuring. They're going to bring all that back up. So would I. It's great marketing.
But you know what the thing is, though, Sean?
It's great marketing.
You've probably heard about how everybody from The Walking Dead who comes on our show gets killed off.
It's possible.
And he sat there going, you know, I'm at the peak of my career right now. I am not going on that show.
He's not
going
to do it. I had to. I had to, man. I got the itch. The Walking Dead's off, man.
It's off the air until October.
The one that counts. In my book, guys, nothing against West Coast style living, but I don't understand it. We went out there when we had our television show, Nate. I felt like an alien. I felt like an alien.
I really did, too.
We went to that studio, and the chick had green hairs and like piercings all through her nose, and she looked at me with my Abraham Lincoln beard, and I thought she was going to cry. I thought she was going to, she thought, oh my God, it's Children of the Corn. They've attacked the West Coast. Where's this guy from? So anyway, that's, it was what it was, but definitely weird, man, out there on the West Coast. Not saying anything, because all I did was see L.A., and I seen some of the smog, and I kind of seen the Hollywood sign through the smog, and I went straight to the studio. We spent the night at a hotel, went out to eat, and we were back on a plane the next day, I think, Nate.
Yeah. Well, Jason and I did go to Universal, the boardwalk.
Yeah, I missed that.
You flew in too late.
I had to work.
I know. That's the price we pay for being.
You guys were like
the
living.
Average Joe still working in TV and radio.
You guys were like living off the government cheese when we started filming that. You guys were, I think.
Yeah, because I left my job to do the TV show.
You were superstars. You didn't need to work. I was the flunky that had the full time job.
And then when we finished, you were the only one with a full time job.
Funny how that works, because if we'd have got picked up for more episodes, I would have been on the hard end of that. The short end of the stick would have fell on me, because they would have said, hey man, you got to make a choice here.
Yeah.
You know, or, well, maybe not. Maybe not. We could have, you know, we could have done something, but, you know, and you guys would have banked. But, I mean, what is it, 98.9% of the time, It's not going, baby, and you got to have a job. You know?
Yup.
Look at us. We'd be in our 40s right now going, can you help me? We wouldn't even have something cool to put on our sign out on the street. It'd just be like, I failed in Hollywood. Can I have a quarter? You know? Just come out with it and say, I am a failed reality TV show host. Help us. Yeah. Anyway, we'll do television for food. We'll do EVP for food. I don't know.
Yes, yes. It's
you like that?
That's when you sit there and go, I will listen to your audio for pay.
That's an orb.
Yes.
Oh, you hear that, Nate. What's that sound, Nathan?
I think that's the sound that tells us that news is on its way, Sean.
G&E show in the news. It's always fresh. It's always exciting. It's fun, strange, it's weird. Isn't it weird, Nate?
It's always weird.
And straight from the G&D Show vaults, and it starts right
now.
Oh, you knocked it out of the park. I got chills.
I got chills.
Let's turn it down a bit. I like our
hey,
news.
Hey, folks, that's right. It's G&D in the news. That's weird news that Sean and I picked right out of the papers because we like the titles.
Yeah.
Of course, we haven't read them yet, so we make a lot of mistakes. Every time we make a mistake, you take a drink. That's the G&D drinking game.
Yeah.
Of course, if you're driving in your car listening to this, please don't play the G&D drinking game. And if you're planning on doing anything important, please listen responsibly.
Don't drink and drive, folks. Right. Sit on your couch and drink.
Hey, Sean.
Don't beat your wife. What?
You've never seen Queen Elizabeth so close to sex.
Oh, my God. I'm excited already. Go ahead, tell me.
This comes to us from the Huffington Post.
Oh, good people.
God save the queen.
Yes,
from
please.
Some cheeky money minters.
Cheeky. You said mentors. Drink
mentors,
up, guys.
Have a drink, folks.
G&D show bell. Drink bell.
A rare banknote.
Yeah.
With the word sex spelt in palm fronds next to the queen is going up for auction.
That's appalling.
I know.
The throne, or the crown is, we're going to die. The imperial men in black will get us.
Yeah. This 50 rupee bill between 1968 and 1973
being
auctioned by the Schlesinger have a drink folks house Moore and Allen and
oh my god drink guys.
No, it's spelt wrong. I'm sorry. So I was trying to figure out what it really said. Auction house Moore and Allen and incident said that in a news release.
Yeah.
And they believe it was not on accident.
Oh, no.
The message is very clear.
Yeah.
Auctioneer Philip Alwood said, it's too precise to be a coincidence.
Oh, my God.
According to the auction house, the note... Yeah. Issued by the, and I'm not going to say that word again because I'm not going
to. Don't say it.
Was seeking a independence from Great Britain.
Yeah.
And that's perhaps why this handiwork became the pro-independent pendant. Have a drink, folks. Basically, folks.
Just tell it in your own words.
It's a 50 rupee bill from, and I'm going to try and say this, Sean.
You are a bum.
Never mind then. Basically, this 50 rupee bill is going up for auction. Its face value is currently at about $3.60.
Right.
50 rupees makes $3.50. But
rubles.
Because of the SEX spelled out on it,
They
believe it will sell for anywhere from $288 to $423.
Oh, my God.
And, Sean, you remember those magic image posters that you had to look at them and clear your...
Of course. Like,
look just beyond it.
And what happened to those?
Well, this is pretty much the same. When I first saw it, I was like, what the heck are they talking about? I'm trying to see it. But if you stare at it and stare just beyond it to the print behind it, all of a sudden the word sex pops out and you cannot... I'll never not see sex ever again. I will see sex in my sleep from now on.
Oh. Yeah, sex.
The joke was better than the story. I'm sorry.
No, it was a good lineup, though. Anyway, is it my turn?
Go ahead.
All right. Let me turn the music up a little bit for this. Exciting. I want the crowd to build it up. Anyway, Coast Guard rescues Florida man from... Yeah, Coast Guard rescues Florida man from unsuccessful bubble journey to Bermuda.
Oh, boy.
Did you hear about this one?
I did not.
Anyway. Pompano. Oh, Pompano. Sorry, guys. Pompano Beach, Florida, April 24th. UPI, thanks, guys, for being awesome. The U.S. Coast Guard retrieved an endurance runner after he ended his aquatic voyage from South Florida to the Bermuda Triangle in his hydropod early Sunday.
Really?
Early Sunday. Wow, this is a quick story here. April 24th. Isn't that today?
What? It's April 24th?
Yeah. It says
that's
early
today?
Sunday. That's today. When do we usually read news stories from today?
They usually get sent to us from yesterday or from Friday, usually.
Anyway, they caught him. South Florida police caught this freak in a hydropod early Sunday. It was the second failed attempt. The second failed attempt from Reza Baluchi. Oh, just in case, guys. An Iranian-born man who lives in Pompano Beach. The Coast Guard had warned Baluchi, 44 years of age, he was not authorized to depart on his journey because his vessel and water conditions were unsafe. Looks like a bunch of bubble wrap. Crazy. The penalty was a 7-year confinement and and a $40,000 fine. In October 2014, his GPS device fell into the ocean about 70 miles off the St. Augustine line there. The Coast Guard began monitoring his movements and rescued him from the ocean. In a letter dated April 15th to Baluchi, Captain A.J. Gould wrote, "Any future voyages not cleared through my will be..." Hey, that's their fault. "Not cleared through my..."
Oh, hey. They had to drink for mine when it was misspelled.
Okay. That's what they said. "Not cleared through my will be terminated as manifestly unsafe. The bubble has 36 buoyancy balls on each side." What'd I tell you? It's bubble wrap. "Side and Baluchi..." That's what it is. I'm not ringing the bell. "Was equipped with a life vest containing a water filter, a GPS tracking device, and a shark repellent." What the heck? You need to talk to this cat. What's a shark repellent besides an arrow or a spear? "I don't know what to do. I don't want to fight with the Coast Guard. I want peace. I'm a lover, not a fighter," he said Friday to the Sun Sentinel in Florida. "I want to find a lawyer to help me." There you go, Johnny Cochran types of the world. Bermuda is 965 miles north of St. Thomas, 1,015 miles northeast of Pompano Beach. According to his website, Baluchi planned to follow the 3,500-mile Bermuda Triangle, which would also take him to Puerto Rico. There you go,
Puerto Rico.
Thank you so much, UPI.
Hey, Sean.
Bubble wrap, man. It didn't talk about his shark repellent. What's a shark repellent?
They are working on new shark repellents made from dead sharks. They kind of scare sharks away.
This guy's already got one, though.
I tell you. Hey, Sean, who built Stonehenge?
Aliens.
Well, according to the Huffington Post and one particular creationist, I'm saying one because I know plenty of other creationists who wouldn't agree with this, Stonehenge was built by Satan's giants.
Do you ever think if there is a God, he's just sitting up there going, "Jesus,
Jesus,
they
laughing
got,
at
they
us.
Got it so wrong."
Who built Stonehenge? One creationist claims to have the answer. Giants. Not just any giants either. Theologist Dr. Dennis Lindsay, president and CEO of Christ for the Nations, claims Satan created a race of giants to build the ancient Magdalite.
You're not sneaking out of that one now.
Magaliths. Hey, it's the same word.
I'm not confirming that. I cannot confirm nor deny.
Speaking last week on TV.
Yeah. What did he do?
He hosted, but go ahead, folks. You can drink on that. Speaking last week on the TV show hosted by Digest Television's Jim Baker. Lindsay announced that Satan had created giants to infiltrate and destroy Israel.
Is this like the Nephilim?
You would think so, but first of all, I was raised to believe that Satan couldn't create anything. He could only corrupt.
Yeah, he's a chump. Get thrown out.
It's not clear how the arranging the stones on the solstice in England would help destroy Israel, but that didn't stop Lindsay.
No, it didn't.
has no background in archaeology listed on his website.
For
the pressing the case.
He doesn't need to have that, Nathan. He's a self-proclaimed creationist.
He's out to destroy God's creations. Not Lindsay, the devil. This is Lindsay speaking.
Oh, the devil. Okay. Did they get his quote from the devil?
With the devil sitting there going, I don't know this guy.
Was he not in?
Mr. Devil's Satan. Like, I have nothing to say on the matter. I don't know this guy. I want nothing to do with it.
Do you have a comment, Mr. Lucifer, on the happenings today?
According to Lindsay, he's out to destroy God's creations, and his whole plan of have a drink. You know what? His whole plan is to contaminate the human race, because Jesus came not to save hybrids or non-human beings,
yes,
or fallen angels or Lucifer.
No, just us.
Lindsay said he came to save human beings and to have a family.
Yeah.
Satan wants to have his own seed and make his own family, Lindsay said in video posted online by Right Wing Watch.
Okay.
There you go, Sean.
So we don't have
Satan wants a family.
So we don't have enough hate in the world. We're going to add to it. We hate hybrids now.
Yes, hybrids. No.
Hybrids against Trump. Why hasn't Mr. Trump responded to us? I'm voting for Mr. Trump, by the way. He says a lot of good things, unless he does something really stupid. I seen he's playing this week, Nathan, taking off. Did you see the video?
I saw the video, Sean. That was very cool of you.
Yeah, I posted it on my page.
You know, folks, again, we are not a political show. We don't tend to talk about politics. But, you know, during the last election, you and I did argue a lot, Sean. So
yeah, we did. I'm not arguing this time because it's not worth it. Every one of them is dippy. Dippy-doo. And you realize that after
when it comes down to our final four.
Anyway, Nathan,
really cares?
Ancient Druids, huh? One of the most popular beliefs was that Stonehenge was built by the Druids. But what do these scholars know? They've only studied it their entire life. You know? Idiots. Idiot scholars. I'm not saying they're right. They could be wrong.
Especially when there are people who have been able to recreate the building of it. So we know that it, you know, was possible for people to build it even in that time. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever.
But hey, what are you going to do?
I'm going to be happy about it, Nathan.
You should be happy about it, Sean.
Yeah.
Hey, Sean, guess what time it is?
It's probably time to, I don't know. What do you want to do? It's time to go to break.
It's time to go to break.
Bring in our guest.
Sorry, folks. No Rot Talk this week because.
Yeah. I was kind of bummed about that.
They took Rot Talk. They took Walking Dead away from
us. Dead. Cliffhanger. Tonight's guest, guys, he's the future of Bigfoot research. He's the co-author of a scientific document that says it's the definite proof that the existence of an unidentified Bigfoot-like creature in the Mount St. Helens exist. Right out there in Washington State, guys, our buddy Mitch Townsend is going to be in the house tonight. He's going to be so exciting. I can't wait to get Mitch in. He rocks. Mitch is the best. He is the future.
Mitch is the best.
Anyway, guys.
You're right. He is the future because he's actually growing the whole idea of Bigfoot research, not just falling back on old ideas.
He's growing right now in anticipation of this commercial break so we can call him. Get it, it's an erection joke.
You're so funny.
I don't know. Did we hit that R rating on Spreaker yet? I
don't think so.
I'm working on it. But
I'm giving you 48 hours in there. Yeah. 48 hours worth of shows, and then, yeah, we'll be there.
Anyway, guys, each week we play a new song, a great song, an independent band song, because we support the little man on this show. This week's band, Nathan, is our good friends Distemper. We played this song before. Remember Distemper?
Yes.
They're out
there. You're not going to play the vampire song I heard earlier?
No, we played that last week with the vampire on.
Oh, did we?
Okay. We did. Now, you don't listen to nothing I do.
I can't hear the music during the break.
You suck. Anyway, guys, Distemper, they're out of Ukraine, somewhere like that. Anyway, Blue Blue Night is the name of the song, name of the band, Distemper. Nathan.
Sean.
Shadow Nation. We'll be right back. Снова родиться. Как
объектов, вычеркнут новейшие карты, вырастут святые деревья, во дворах заброшенных фабрик, высохнут кровавые реки, нефть заменит топливом мирным, войны прекратятся навеки, и бездомный пес станет мирным. Может быть, тогда будет лучше этот мир. Чистая вода, города без черных дыр. Может, в тот же час небо пальцем надави, выльются на нас потоки счастья и любви. Может быть, тогда будет нечего делить, и про холода можно навсегда забыть. Может быть, тогда на другой конец земли отвезут меня волшебные страсти кораблей. Каждый виновен, что мир так устроен. Каждый обязан видеть заразу.
Люди микробы, копятся злоба, землю пускают. everybody, it's Dean Haglin, Langley from The X-Files, and for some reason, you're listening to the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show. Trust no one.
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only, mystifying... Oh, I'm out of breath. Oracle Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show, good friend of the show, is in-house tonight! He's the future of the Bigfoot research. He is the co-author of a scientific document that he says definitely proves the existence of an unidentified Bigfoot-like creature in the Mount St. Helens area of Washington State. Please help us welcome Shadow Nation, our good friend. It's an honor to have him back. Mr. Mitchell Townsend in the house. Mitch, what's up, brother?
Thank you, gentlemen. Ghostman and Demon Hunter. Right on.
That's right, brother. We got you back on. Last time you came on, people were going insane, saying, who is this guy? Because you're like a breath of fresh air in the Bigfoot research community. And you came in here and you blew people away. Because, you know, you get a lot of people on. And some people talk about how they, you know, bought ape suits frozen in ice. And I'm kidding.
We won't talk about that interview, Sean.
I'm kidding, Mitch.
Oh, yeah.
I'm kidding. Now, some people come on that maybe have done something like that and get angry when you ask them questions about that. You know, so I don't know. But you're in here. You hit it out of the park, bro. You're doing so much in the Bigfoot research community. What's going on? Tell us what's up right now.
Well, we've had some significant activity since the last time we chatted. I actually rewrote the paper and increased its solidity as far as adding additional resources that actually increased, in my opinion, the level of reliability with our conclusions. So I rewrote that paper, and the disconnect between the Bigfoot community and the academic community is the Bigfoot community doesn't seem to write a lot of papers or present their information and research at legitimate academic research conferences. So that's what we did. We took a different direction and put together a presentation and an increased paper for the 69th Annual Anthropological Research Conference to a room full of governmental and academic archaeologists and anthropologists.
No,
and that was in the next last month, sure.
How's that been, Mitch? How has the government, have they been receptive, helpful, or they say get out?
Well, I think, in all honesty, some of their mouths hit the floor. It didn't anticipate a Bigfoot-related research project, but that's exactly what it was. And we presented all of the data that we discovered, not only the zoological dentition evidence or the chewing evidence, which was they were primarily interested in as a determinative, so they can go back and look at previous pre-archaic digs based upon extension of our research, hopefully. With its peer reviewed, and the academic side was really impressed with our length and breadth in research and our conclusions and how we back them up and the fact that our conclusions stand intact.
Yeah.
As of 8 months later, nobody's been able to touch us. I get a lot of hate mail and, you know, personal attacks, but as far as our research is concerned, it stands intact.
Now, the hate mail, anybody we can mention on air?
you know, I don't want to give these internet thugs, keyboard commandos, I call them, any airtime. Right. They know who they are, and there's a couple of them, too, in particular. If you look around the net, you can see them, but their shots are cheap and shallow, and so I just tend to let people like that stew in their own juices, you know what I mean?
Haters, man.
Yeah. Haters, man. They're all over.
They're everywhere, and especially you came out swinging out of the corner, and they have nothing. You do. They don't, and that's what's happening right now, but Nathan, what do you think? I mean, Mitch has got all this stuff going on. And talk about some of the universities you've been teaching at. Because a lot of people come on the show, and I'm not taking anything away. They have a local Bigfoot research group. They go out, you know, and they look for Sasquatch and things like this, and they try to find proof. But not only do you do that, because you're like a rogue. You're like Indiana Jones of the Bigfoot research community. You know that, Nate. Mitch goes out by himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you teach at universities.
Yeah, we went rogue. We went rogue for sure.
Yeah, but you teach at universities. You put on classes. Talk about that.
I have taught overseas at universities in South Korea and Japan. I've taught at the college level here in the United States. My research background is quite extensive, actually, in education technology. I'm actually a research scholar, and that's one of the things that I do. I'm still working to finish that doctoral degree. I have to get it, the dissertation completed, but that's just about finished. And I emailed you guys some information, some links on my background, some Army pictures, and picture of the conference inclusion plate, correction, just a conference paper plate.
From the ancient origins,
Yeah, for you guys, to your email. And so really, on the teaching side, I've taught language, I've taught philosophy, I've taught history at the university level internationally. At the college level here in the United States, I've taught computer science classes. I designed and created and taught the only two college-level Bigfoot classes in the world, CSI Bigfoot and Bigfoot Salt, presented those at Centralia College and Lower Columbia College over the last couple years. Yeah. We'll be presenting updated research probably at another series of community colleges with also a series of debates. I'm going to go head-to-head at these colleges with the best critics, and we're going to do some debate club-style debates, and we'll see exactly where we stand. I think at this point, we need to get our material peer-reviewed published, and then we're going to start shopping it to the major universities and part of the anthropological research or archaeological research divisions. But my classes are all going online. So regardless if I can get past the gatekeepers at the university and graduate level, the public will be able to access all of my research and independent discoveries for themselves for a very nominal amount of money. Sure.
Yeah.
Now here's the question I have for you, and this is the thing I bring up with a lot of the ghost hunters and things like that. There is a lot of evidence about ghosts, but no real proof. Where do you lie on evidence versus proof on Bigfoot evidence? And
that is a fundamental question, sir. And let me address that. There is a mistaken notion that proof has to be absolute. Proof is a preponderance of evidence. That's what it is. Now, I want you guys to think about that for a second. Proof is a preponderance of the evidence. So when you add a series of evidence profiles together and become more and more distinctive and create the capacity to entertain additional theoretical possibilities, okay, then you move on to what levels of proof are they? Is DNA more a higher level of reliability of proof than, say, tracks or video or photos or audio recordings? That's an interesting question. I think each individual scientist probably has a different chronological list. But myself, I look for three things. A, is it possible to fake that evidence? Can you fake tracks? Not really, because it's a dynamic transfer of energy signature. And anybody who knows that knows it's very hard to fake a good track. Secondly, DNA. The boat's still out on that one, but I tend to believe that they're going to crack that one here pretty soon, sooner or later.
Yeah.
You have audios, videos, recordings, and those tend to be on the lower amount of reliable scale. So let's look at forensic evidence for a second. The DNA, I already mentioned that if they crack, that's going to be much higher in reliability. Let's look at the possibility of teeth marks in bones. Very simple. An organism grabs a rib bone and literally chomps out a piece of the bone. If you tried to do that as a human being, your teeth would shatter.
Yeah.
But that's what we have. And if you look at it microscopically, it's obvious that there's no tool marks, no fire marks, no arrow marks, no tool marks whatsoever, and hardly any scavenger marks of any unclassified variety. So what we're looking at is evidence on a very high scale of reliability. It's probably impossible to fake, especially at the microscopic level. That's repeatable, verifiable, and available for anybody to examine.
Yeah.
So in my opinion, that's the highest level of proof that we have so far. And that's kind of, for me, is the icing on the cake. So if you add it all up, and then you put that icing on that cake, to me, the totality of the evidence at this point in time is proof.
Right.
That's my opinion.
Now, the last time you were on the show, I got to bring this up, but we really didn't get to discuss it. The relationship between the modern-day Bigfoot and Gigantopithecus.
Okay, that's an interesting loaded question there. There's three really major theories. One is the pure Gigantopithecus theory. The other one is pretty much the relic hominid theory. And then there's the hybrid theory, which I'm a subscriber to. I tend to fall down, and in my evidence for our research conclusively states that, in our opinion, that apparently it may have been Gigantopithecus at one time. The evidence suggests it made successive waves of migration along with Asiatic Native Americans and First Nation Canadians over the last several Ice Age epochs, Pleistocene and Holocene eras. The Native American story suggests similar morphology, functionality, and behavioral manifestation. So, but we're looking at protuberant breasts, which aren't on primates, which is breasts that you see on human beings that are extended all the time and not on primates. That's a human feature. You're looking at different types of facial structures based on the reports. I have a track myself and sent one to Sean, I believe, that proves hybridization. It has Morton's foot, which is a congenital human defect.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you examine the teeth structures that we have, they're obviously not ape or chimpanzee or bonobo. They're human, hominid. So if you track the trail of evidence, you're looking, in my opinion, at a hybridized process of evolutionary parallel development that has intersected with hominin evolutionary development probably many times over the last 100,000 years, as evidenced by the teeth, the facial structures, as well as the human protuberant breasts on the reports. So if you follow the theoretical chain, the first thing you start out with is the Gigantopithecus. You eliminate all the evidence for that, and then you go into a well of hominid. And then you eliminate all the evidence for that, and then what are you left with? A combination,
right,
which is hybridization, very simply.
Now listen, Mitch, you are known, you're known around the world for your research, of course, your grade A top shelf stuff. 1980, Mount St. Helens erupts. Okay, people have stories everywhere about visit the grave of Sasquatch. They now have graves out there that you can check all this stuff out. Walk us through the story. 35 years ago, you know, or roughly 1980, so whenever, this eruption happens. You've been out to this site. Where are these creatures hiding? Is it like the Native American? What did they find, first off? I think you mentioned the military before. What happened out there, Mount St. Helens, after the eruption?
It was an interesting phenomenon. The government had a really secrecy over the blanket, over the whole operation. I was about 16 at the time, living in Mason County, and we heard a lot of stories about unexplained creatures and this and that. And one of my uncles actually did some of the logging in the recovery, and he heard similar stories from DNR. And I did have some gentlemen that came to one of my college classes, weren't registered, and they were from DNR providing misinformation, in my opinion, services for whomever. So I can't give you a definitive, this is what happened. I don't think there's any Bigfoot graves out there, really. I mean, we've heard all these things. I've pretty much climbed and hiked and tracked all sides of Mount St. Helens over the last 35 years and know all the locals all around the area, and my research partner knows the other side of the mountain. So we would have heard about it, probably. Secondly, it wouldn't surprise me. The Native Americans and historical research suggest that there's been monkey men, as they call them. They call that Monkey Man Mountain, and have for hundreds of years. The Native Americans used to get together there at the end of the summer and have their ball games around Spirit Lake.
Okay.
And they had a lot of incidents of losing women to unidentified creatures coming out of the water. They say it was related to me. That were wet, and thus they called it Spirits of the Lake, or Spirit Lake. The research that I've seen and we've conducted also suggests that there's community or some type of independent organisms running around that area, and have historically, and I don't say that just by speculation,
right,
based upon our research, because the sites had very little scavenger activity, which is in violation of their natural occurring behavior. We think they were marked with urine, which would suggest that those organisms have historically been aware of that unclassified creature for generations, and they have instituted or inculcated within their innate DNA an understanding and identification of that as a dangerous organism.
Right.
So genetically and research-wise, the ethnographic studies, the Caucasian historical research all suggest that there's been activity at that mountain for hundreds of years, and so it's not that far of a stretch to say that there has to be some type of evidence out there if people are willing to go out and look.
Now, Mitch, let's talk about after the eruption. There's been some wild stories, maybe not wild stories, about the military was out there, and there was a lot of suspicious stuff going on, body bags, removal of some type of bodies. What do you know about that?
I have heard rumors to that effect, and once again, I don't know for sure.
Right.
I can confirm rumors, being from the area, but I can't confirm dates, times, organization, transportation, location, you know, what they were doing out there. So I don't want to give your listeners a false sense of that I have an understanding of what's going on, but I'm with you, and I did hear a lot of rumors at that time and all the way through the last year or two as I've been presenting this research. People search me out in the local area because of the research and the newspaper articles and everything else, and
You
know, walk up to me in the store and say, hey, listen, there's some weird stuff happening out there, so
yeah,
not surprised.
You'd never be able to get me off your porch, dude. You know that. I'd be out there going, so what do you think about this, Mitch? What's going on with this? But, in one of your articles you sent us, is Bigfoot Real? Emerging Scientific Evidence. Great article that you did out of Ancient Origins. I believe it was that magazine, Reconstructing the Story of Humanity.
Right.
One of the top questions, is Bigfoot real? Emerging Scientific Evidence. It talks about the better question would be why the mainstream science failed to put the question to the test. Why is that? Why is there so few out there in the, I mean, you have yourself, but where are these top flight scientific researchers coming forward and helping you out with this? Where are these people? Why aren't they here?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's a couple different reasons. There are a few out there. Dr. Meldrum is a top flight researcher. He's out there working. We've had correspondence. It always hasn't been pleasant, but it's been informative. Dr. Bindernagel is another one that I've had correspondence with. It's always been pleasant and informative. But if you get too far into this, it's almost like a tar pit, that the stigma or the stench, as I like to call it, tends to start closing doors if you get too wrapped up into this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you become known as the Bigfoot guy or, you know, the authority in charge, then you might make money in the Bigfoot world, but slowly, over a period of time, your academic opportunities start to dwindle.
That's crazy.
Because people don't take you seriously. And that's one of the reasons I don't particularly care, because at this point I don't teach at a big university and I don't charge anything for my activities. And so for me, it's just about the research.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to take somebody like that who doesn't care. I don't care what anybody thinks. I don't care what anybody does. I'm out here to produce the best product I can possibly produce and try to help people move the ball down the field. Am I going to solve it? I think I already have, but I won't ever get credit for the research, and that's fine. Somebody else might pick it up off the shelf in a couple of years and say, hey, you know, this is some groundbreaking stuff. At minimum, we're expanding on the academic, anthropological, and archaeological research and how to identify human or hominin chewing evidence in old archaeological digs. So we're doing a service to not only the Bigfoot community, in my opinion, but also trying to expand the current research in the academic community. And it's really about bridging the gap.
Yeah.
I mean, the other side of it is the Bigfoot community is a joke. All they do is it's a bloodbath. They just attack each other, and it's just a personality war. And quite frankly, I think it's a joke. And if I didn't think that this was so important, this discovery, I would have put it down a long time ago,
yeah.
Just based on that. I've never seen anything so childishly pathetic in my life.
Oh, you should venture out to the rest of the paranormal community. You'll be amazed how alike it is.
Really? Same way, huh?
Almost identical.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
It seems to be that when people don't, I don't know, if they can't see it, smell it, taste it, or functionally get their little heads around it, I mean, I don't want to be, you know, arrogant about it, but it just seems like the majority of the people on this planet are really narrow-minded and don't seem to be able to think about the possibilities of what might actually be happening outside their field of vision. And so, you know what? In the end of the day, I don't really care. I'm just going to see this thing through. I gave a commitment, and we'll get this in front of as many people as we can.
Yeah.
And the more people attack me, the more I realize that I'm getting close. That's the way I look at it.
Now, when we look at Bigfoot, Sasquatch, you know, the Fox monster, there's the, you know, out in the Himalayas, they have the abominable snowman. Obviously, these creatures have mutated over time to adapt to their locations.
Absolutely.
So are there like desert Bigfoot out there?
I mean,
if they could live in the frozen wasteland of the Himalayas, couldn't they live in the in caverns and stuff around the deserts?
The first thing I'll say is there's only one creature that lives in every continent, and every environment on the world, and that's man, and he walked there. So having said that, I would say absolutely. And there's groups, Southwest Bigfoot Research Association, Mr. Mark Parr, I'll give him a shout out. They're doing some great work down in the Southwest in the desert areas. If you look at our research, has identified three different species. The ones up in northern Canada, the ones in the desert areas here in the Southwest, and the ones here in the Pacific Northwest. They seem to share different morphs or share some features, but some of them aren't. Facial structures, one of them, that they don't seem to share, or size. There's size differentiations between different environments. Just look at different rabbits, you know, a regular brown rabbit or an Arctic rabbit. I mean, just changing colors is a natural adaptation to survival, the ability to hunt, the animals that can't die out, natural selection all around us. It makes perfect sense that a naturally occurring organism, which in my opinion is what this unclassified hominin is, would have the ability to change. Look at the difference between Eskimos and, say, Vikings or Norwegians or African Americans versus Eskimos. Obviously, we all change to some extent to our environmental pressures or climatic pressures.
Yeah.
And so it stands to logic. It just seems reasonable and logic. And that's why I don't understand why it's so hard for people to grasp the concept.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's talk about, because you've been on the trail of these beings, these primates, if you will, and you've seen a lot of stuff. Can you walk us through some of your weirdest moments, some of your most amazing times in the field?
Absolutely, love to. We've seen some, first of all, I want to tell everybody I've never seen a Bigfoot in front of me in the middle of the day. So let's get that out of the way front. Most of my research is at night, in lights out condition. I've had them all around me. I use an infrared body tracker. It's called Game Finder. Life Finder is another one. Your hunters will be familiar with that. So I can cross-reference my optical potentiality with infrared detecting instruments. So I know that I'm not hallucinating. I've seen infrared, correction, I've seen self-illuminating red eyes. I've seen illuminating, and they were Asian-shaped. I've seen self-illuminating round eyes that were whitish. I've seen blue eyes, amber eyes. I even saw a pair of green eyes one time out there in the bush, out of Bumping Lake. I don't mind telling your friends that. That's a huge mecca.
Yeah.
I met it out there in 2 weeks with a bunch of heavyweight Bigfoot world-class researchers. And we're headed out there, and I'm going to take them to a place where there's a colleague of mine sent me a current picture, and if we ever get together, I'll show you guys it in person, but I'm not at liberty to send it over the net.
Yeah.
Right at that same place. It's a Bigfoot. There's no doubt about it. You can see its face, you can see its arms, you can see its chest, you can see its ball face, the whole nine yards. We're going there, and we're going to mimic the calling strategy that I use to bring him down to interact with my college class students. We're going to stick people in individual bushes at these different hot spots and make them sleep out there all night by themselves.
Oh, nice.
And so I'm going to call them down, and then they're going to come in and interact, hopefully, with these individual, they're not going to be in ghillie suits. I'm just going to stick them under bushes and put nets over them, and they'll know where they're at, and they can smell them. And then I'm going to use my calling strategies to bring them down. It's a distressed elk killing strategy, so they can hear that. And every predator within, like, you know, 50 miles is going to haul ass over there for a free meal.
Right.
And we've been very successful with that calling strategy with our academic students, and as well as some of the guests that we've taken over there. The craziest thing I've ever happened to me was when I was with a semi-official BFR expedition out there, the first time I went out there. Full ghillie suit. I squirreled myself down in this bush, pulled my Gore-Tex cover over my head and zipped it up to my eyeballs, and I was using some of the other people for bait. They were out there, and they didn't know where I was out there. I kind of tracked everybody out there. They made a lot of noise and did some stuff, and a couple of them were camping out there. And long story short, about 4 o'clock in the morning, I kind of dozed off. And the next thing I know, something is smacking me on the back of the head with a stick. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I'm in the bush, squirreled down in here, and nobody knows where I'm at. And something snuck up on me. First of all, found me.
Yeah.
Then snuck up behind me, crawled in, and not woke, didn't wake me up, and still slapped me on the head with a stick.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it found me and it's petrified. Sure. Literally petrified, and that's a common feeling that people have. And so I've got my .40 caliber Beretta on my chest, and I'm thinking, you know, if this escalates, we're going to have a shootout right here, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because the next one might be a rock to the side of the head. You don't know.
Right.
And I'm sitting there, but I don't want to unzip it past my eyeballs, you know, because I'm scared.
Yeah.
All in all honesty, I'm scared, guys. You know, 12 years with the infantry, last two with the Green Berets, yeah, I was scared. So anyway, I closed my ear with my left hand and commenced it with my right hand to put the pistol up next to my ear to shoot backwards. And if the tapping escalated, it tapped me one or two more times, just gently. As soon as I popped the safety off, something went tearing through the bushes behind me, away from me. So whatever it was, found me in the dark, full ghillie suit, and snuck up behind me and let me know that it knew that I was there. And that's pretty freaky, man. I mean, just to be out there all night anyway by yourself and hearing weird stuff and, you know, sticks breaking and eyeballs. And it's not for the faint of heart. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Especially when you're there by yourself and nobody's around to help you out. But
well, you said last time you had some students out there and they had to leave. You had to walk them out.
I had to walk a few students out, and that was June of this last year at 2015, because we had an incident where, and I was walking back from doing the calling strategy. Several of the students ran up to me and said that they had had a sighting right by the campsite that they had, and I'll take them at their word, because they all repeated the same story in class about a week later, that a female and a baby had walked right in front of the campfire in front of about 10 of the students. And
wow.
Some of them just literally freaked out and just couldn't handle the experience. And when I got back, they were all sobbing and took off.
You know,
they got in their vehicles.
That would lead me to believe, Mitch, that these beings have no fear of humans, but yet they're so hard to find.
I don't think they're that hard to find. I think they are found when they want to be found. I think they're just everywhere that you'd see a bear or a cougar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they are extremely intelligent. I think they just want to be left alone, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're aware of who we are and the threat that we are. And it's like any other animal. It's trying to teach its young how to survive and how to maintain its life. And if they are indeed hybrid hominins, they have intelligence, they have a language, which means they have a hyoid bone, which means they are hominin. That's another thing, by the way.
Yeah.
Some of these people have cracked the language. Ron Moorhead has 5 hours of tape from the Sierra Sounds, and he's got some Defense Language Institute linguists on it. They've cracked the language, and it has to have a hyoid bone, which means, once again, it's hybrid of some unknown variety or a parallel evolutionary development. In the end, one of them's going to walk right out of the bushes and going to walk up to one of us and say, "How you doing? Here I am."
Yeah.
Or somebody's going to get lucky, and they're going to get one of them's trust, and they're going to start doing some serious research. Quite frankly, I think it's going to take more than that, because here I am attacked regularly with forensic dental evidence that's impossible to fake. I'm trying to do all the right things, making it available for every scientist in the world and going to world-class academic conferences and yet still I get attacked viciously and minimized and, how shall I say, ignored. That's a great, that's a better word for it, just ignored. But we're not going away.
Yeah.
And in the end, I think, I'm not just a one-trick pony. I like to say that, you know, that we didn't just get here one day and wrote a paper.
Yeah, oh yeah.
We've been doing it for some time. People don't understand that. And we have a lot of other independent discoveries as well related to other people's works that they may have overlooked or missed or didn't coordinate, which led us to our discoveries. So as we move forward, we're going to institute new programs based upon our success, and that's, we're going to be testing those initial programs in 2 weeks, the 14th, out there. And we'll go from there. But I truly believe it's going to take an extended field effort in the deep bush by one or two single individuals. And, man, you think about the kind of courage that that's going to take. Would you go out there and live in Bigfoot City for a couple weeks?
With you, I'd try it, but not by myself. With that Beretta strapped to your side. Well, you know, that's the thing.
A large supply of adult diapers, my friend.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's the thing about it. Like you said, that they're trying to identify the different races, if you will, of these right. beings. Just like with the human race, you have hostile, you have friendly. You know, that my thought on that is, where's the hostiles? I mean, you say that they're not afraid of us. They've shown themselves to us. With their size, and you would think their strength, they could take over this planet. The hostiles, you know, what are they waiting on?
One word, firearms. Yeah. They're afraid of guns.
Yeah.
And when the white man came in the 16th, 17th, 1800s, these creatures start pulling back.
Yeah.
They know what it means. The American Indian knew what it meant. And I think that you're probably, this is a wild guess, but I assume, I'm pretty sure this is good advice, that the majority of the concentrations of these Bigfoot communities, if they have communities, are on Native American reservations. Oh, or huge, deep in national forests to where people don't go, hunters don't go.
Yeah.
And I think in the end, we're going to see not a competition, because they know they can't compete. That's why they're avoiding us. I'll give you an example. Chimps in Uganda during the civil wars of the 80s, 70s, and 80s started doing their activities at night because they were being slaughtered by rebel armies during the day for food. So they actually changed their naturally occurring behaviors based upon that threat to their survival of their species. And so we have parallels in the natural animal kingdom of behavioral changes based upon existent threats to a species' survival, and that's, you know, a level, lower level of primate intelligence. So if you have something that's hybridized, that has some type of functional humanoid intelligence, wow, think about that for a second. Possibilities are endless. I mean, but once again, you get back to firearms. And in the end, they have a perfect life.
Right.
They don't have to work. They don't have a mortgage. They get to hunt and fish. Nobody's messing with them. Why would they want to change that?
That's true. It's kind of like it was intended to be for us, right? They don't need TVs and Xboxes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now, one of the things that I think by doing this research that I'm doing is trying to lay the groundwork to help, I don't know, this sounds kind of corny, but to help this creature, whatever it is, if they're human-like, humanoid, or hominin, to reintegrate with society, with humans, with Native Americans, without feeling threatened.
Yeah.
And maybe that includes habitat, protected habitat. Who knows? But we're not going to know until we get there.
Right.
And for all the haters out there, you guys, man, you're wasting your time on me, first of all, and all you're doing is making it harder for everybody else, including yourselves. Secondly, the top flight Bigfoot researchers, start writing papers. Start presenting your research to academic and archaeological research conferences.
Yeah.
Bridge the gap between research and conference, academics, and the Bigfoot community.
But,
that's the only
way.
Why
would they do that when they might be able to get their own TV show?
They can do it anyway, I think. It would give them more credibility. that's the way I look at it, is, you know, like these television shows, let's not mention any of them that are out there right now, but it makes you wonder, after all the money they spend and how many years, what are they waiting on? We're all ready to see some serious results. I mean, they've had some preliminary results, but I keep waiting to see the write-up, the paper. Where's the paper?
Right, right. Well, I think everybody knows in the reality TV world, Bigfoot would just get in the way of production, baby. You know? It's if they actually spotted a real Bigfoot. They got that shit scripted, man. So, you know, anyway.
Well, you wouldn't want to find anything, because then everybody's gig would be over, for sure.
It'd be done.
Now, quick question for you. Actually, it's not a quick question. It's actually, in my opinion, an important question. Sean and I have this idea where when we go on a ghost hunt, we go on a ghost hunt. When we go out looking for a UFO, we go out looking for a UFO. But there are times where we find these places that we really love, and we like going to them. So rather than going on a ghost hunt, we will just throw a party in the most haunted house that we can find. We had a few weeks ago, we had a gentleman on named John Edmonds, who his home is very, very affected by UFO phenomenon. And we said, you know, what could we come by? He goes, yeah, we'll sit on the back porch and have a few beers. And that's something Sean and I will do. But that doesn't sound like a good idea if you're in a squatch-infested area to go up with a keg.
We've done that.
Have you?
You'd be surprised. I had some guys from a heavy metal band, Metal Church, and band Sin Circus. They just got back from a world tour right now. And I take them up there. They play their music, drinking whiskey, having a great time. And then I take them out at night and, you know, do the circuit. Yeah. And so it's really... They only have one weakness. It's curiosity.
Yeah.
And if you can give them different looks, different sounds, and different activities, they're going to get closer and check it out.
Well, you know, I always...
What I like...
Go ahead,
Mitch. Go up and have a party, too. But I also like to go up and have a little camp out.
Yeah, yeah.
Take some people up there in Bigfoot turf, push them into different little areas with a radio.
Yeah.
Have them do different activities, and just see what happens.
You ever just gone up and had some people run a drum circle or something?
Say again, I'm sorry.
Have you ever had just a bunch of like hippies go up and do a drum circle?
I haven't organized a drum circle, but I have seen other people do it. More on the UFO side, the ufology side, I like to call them.
Yeah.
Good people on the main, and they're trying very hard themselves to explain other types of phenomenon. You know, you got to give them a plug. I mean, they're up against a bigger wave of skepticism than kind of that I am. And you know, everybody that's out there banging away, you got to give them props. I mean, because this is a tough gig. I mean, emotionally, physically, you got to be tip top shape to be out there in the bush, humping 45 degree hills with an 80-pound ruck. You know. It's not for the faint of heart. And then you get there, and you're getting screamed at all night, infrasound, and hollered at, and sticks thrown at you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll make you, it'll tighten you up, or it'll send you home, and you'll never come back in the woods, not even in the yard.
That should be in the Olympics, squatch hunting, you know? Squatch. Squatch
racing. Yeah. I don't like to say hunting. Let's see, tracking.
That's
squatch,
right, tracking, not hunting. We don't want to hunt these things. That's all right. Now, what information, info could you give somebody if they came face to face with one of these things in the woods? What would you say you could do? Because you're a survivalist. You know pretty much what to do in the face of danger. What would you tell somebody?
First of all, yes, I am training survival for all my haters out there.
Yes.
And I sent you guys some pictures of with the Green Berets and with my mechanized infantry as well as my bio. So read them and weep, haters.
That's right.
But yeah, first thing I would say to them is don't be a threat. Go down to a submissive posture. It could snap your neck in a millisecond. You have no chance, even with a pistol or a shotgun. You might get one shot off if you're lucky. Or it just might beam you in the head with a rock from around a tree at 30 meters. You don't know. So don't be a threat. If you happen to just walk into one and you're face-to-face, get down on your hands and knees, put your hands out so you can see your hands, and look down. Don't look it in the eyes. You look in the eyes, you're threatening it. You're challenging it. You do the same with a bear. You don't look these animals in the eyes. Get on your hands and knees and don't be a threat.
So still, the rules
My guess is you're just going to freeze.
Yeah.
You're going to be so petrified that no matter what I tell you, you're just going to freeze.
Yeah.
You literally freeze. And it might walk right up and slap you on the head, and you'll just fall right on over. Yeah.
Well, hopefully the smell of urine will be a deterrent, because I definitely pee my pants if I piss all over myself.
Well, it might come up and give you a sniff to check your address. You never know.
It might have a new boyfriend after that, a girlfriend. You never know.
Watch out.
Yeah.
You might end up on the 5 o'clock news, you know. Well, you know, they find Sean in the woods, you know, in an uncompromising position.
You know I wouldn't get no big press. It'd be in the Sun Times or something. Man gets raped by Bigfoot. That's how it would be.
Oh, man, you'd never live that one down, bro.
You'd interview me, though. You'd want me to write a paper with you.
Oh, yeah, you'd have to write a paper and present it at conference, man.
Yeah, you would make me research this stuff for the rest of my life and go on tour and tell people the truth. Yeah. I'd never live.
Oh, your book would be amazing. You'd have movie offers and everything.
What about this?
Are you going to star in your own porn movies?
Yeah. The haters would be like, how are we even going to start with this guy? How's he lying?
I'm telling
you. Anyway, Mitch, I know we ran out of time, brother, but it's amazing. Sure. I know that you haven't been doing many interviews because you're doing serious research right now. Thanks for taking the time, brother. How can our listeners find out more about you and more about what's going on? And most importantly, how can they support you?
Very simply, whenever they hear somebody badmouth me, ask them one question. Tell them to ask the haters one question. Can you point out in his research, in his paper, where he's wrong? Very simply. That's all I want people to ask. Secondly, when they access my papers, my email address is on the front page. And so any links you can email, or you can email me directly. You can call me personally if you want.
Right.
360-219-5423. Feel free to call me. Even haters. Yeah. I love haters too. So the reason I love them is because it just fuels me to keep going.
All right. Well, I hope no nuts start calling you now, Mitch. There's a lot of nuts
I don't
listen to the show.
I'm half nuts myself. I must be doing this kind of research.
That's true. Well, the MIB.
I was going to play some of the Sasquatch sounds that you told us about on Something in the Woods.
Right.
OriginBigfoot.com, but they look like they're copyrighted, so I'm not going to play them.
Yeah, let's not do that.
They might be. You could probably go to BFRO. I think they have accessed a couple of their sounds and got them on their site. Mr. Moorhead's not happy about that from what I hear, but you can access some of them, the whoops and the screams. And if I ever get together with you guys, I'll just show you my personal collection of audio recordings and pictures.
Well, we just got to come out there and go on a camping trip with you.
Well, he already said we could come out. We haven't planned it yet.
Guys, you guys are welcome anytime. The best time to come out is from the 1st of May till about the 1st of June, and then October. Because I like to hit them when they've been in the bush all year. The snows are just melting, and they're very pent-up curiosity. So I'll get all the attention. The reason I go back out in October is because all the campers are gone, the snows are coming in, and there's a ton of them out there because we think they're gathering in large numbers for cultural exchange in the fall. So, yeah, whenever you guys are ready,
it's
come on down.
Yeah.
Come
it's on SquatchCon. They're all getting together. And
that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this.
Well, I tell you what, you'll never be the same. It's kind of like skydiving.
No, I can't. We're going to plan that. Absolutely. I want to do it this year. But I wanted to say real quick to our listeners out there, if you want to find more out about Mitch Townsend, you can check out his research also and follow him at Facebook. Mitch, do you got a Twitter too?
No, I don't do Twitter. If people, I like to talk to people directly rather than transmit messages in mass. So people can call me. They can email me. They can comment. Or whatever they want to do. I just want to be serious, take a look at the paper, and if they've got a legitimate question, by all means, give me a holler, and I will answer your questions regardless. And I think that's extremely important. Yeah. Most Bigfoot researchers don't do that, but I do.
You do, sir. And I tell you, I believe. I do believe. I want to believe, and I believe. And I think the person that will bring forth the evidence on Bigfoot, if not a live Bigfoot, is going to be you. I have to say that. You or someone...
Well, I'm not giving up. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're going to be the one to open it up for us, brother. I tell you what, stay on the line 1 second. Could you do that for us, Mitch?
Absolutely. Thanks again for all your listeners, and you guys be safe out there.
Oh, my God. Stay on the line. Mitch Townsend, everybody, check him out on Facebook. Check out his work. It's groundbreaking. And if you're not interested today, You will be tomorrow when it's on CNN. What do you think, Nathan?
I think we're probably going to have to wrap up for the night, Sean. But first, I do want to send out the love and the pain for our loss of Prince this week, Sean.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Rest in peace.
We lost
bro.
Prince this week. I'm a child of the 70s, grew up through the 80s, and Prince was a big part of that. And despite Purple Rain.
Yeah.
But
that's bad news.
But lost him. Loved him. Goodbye,
yeah.
Prince.
Yeah, goodbye. Rest in peace. Need more like him. Anyway, guys, be sure to check us out this Friday at Comic-Con. If you want to check out some more of Mitch Townsend's stuff, he actually has a cast that he had sent with us about a Bigfoot print. We will have that there along with some of the Dybbuk Box collectibles and some of the haunted artifacts that we collected over the years. And be part of the broadcast. We're going live from Indiana Comic-Con, April 29th, 6:30 to 7:30, room 140. Yeah, let's pay the bills, Nathan.
Sounds good.
Here we go. All right, guys, that's it. Mitch Townsend, be sure to check him out. Facebook, follow all his work. Okay, special thanks to our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher Smart Radio, Spreaker, Planet Paranormal, Paranormal A Radio, Canadian Radio, Attentive Home Healthcare, that's attentivehhc.org, the SYL Project. Give some love, share some love. Everybody needs some love, the SYLproject.com. From the haunted back roads of America, this has been another exclusive G&D show interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't. Demon Hunter.
Because.
We love you guys.